How do you become a great salesperson without becoming someone that you're not?
Practice. You know, Tony Gwynn was my inspiration to be a great salesperson because naturally, which I possessed as a salesperson, naturally, he's to me the greatest ball hitter in the world. And when I was 12 years old, he owned the San Diego School of Baseball. And it used to just amaze me. Not only would he take the time to give back and tell me that by helping me, he was learning more about what he was doing, but more importantly, he would study the old Betamax green screen to see where this release at hours practicing. And I'm like, why is he practicing bass? Why is he practicing this so much? He's the greatest hitter, right? He batted 394 last season. I couldn't get it. And then when I got out of law school and became a salesperson and the stigma that was related to the salesperson and all the things that naturally were inherent in that stigma of overselling, back-end selling, lying, manipulating, and cheating, I learned that I had to fight my natural ability by being a professional, by practicing being open-minded. Practicing being open-minded. It's different than seeing everybody as a gatekeeper, which is initially the old, I'm old. So this is 90s, early 90s sales training. Solution selling, even though they called it solution selling, was how to overcome things. And for me, it was ascertaining having an open mind and practicing having an open mind. What does that mean? That there's actually a template, number one, of identifying, I only want to do business with open-minded people. Why? Because I wasted so much time trying to convince closed-minded people of something, re-engineer a vision of somebody who has a closed mind. It takes 1,000 times the energy to re-engineer or to overcome a closed mind than it does to convince or to engineer an open mind. And today, as I'm an old man, like I said, because I am in the social realm, where before when I was looking for help, right? Something that takes radical humility and open mind. What was interesting is there's only two or three people that somebody knew that could help me. See, the math alone of having 1,000 people on average that you can help me with. So I started realizing the first step in being a great salesperson was finding people with open mind and having one yourself and practicing having an open mind because you're going to attract like minds.
So if you're practicing, how do you stay authentic? Because one of the things that we find a lot, especially with new salespeople, they come in, they're gonna sell for the first time, and they start to act and practice acting like they think a salesperson is supposed to be. So talk to us specifically about what you were practicing and how you managed to stay authentic, if that was something that you thought about.
Yeah, so I started thinking about the processes and how my personality fit into the processes. So for me, I divided things into 5 stages. And I started realizing that the first step of selling was just to stimulate interest. And the best way to stimulate interest was to connect emotionally. If you connect emotionally, that gives you an opportunity to be credible. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things that I learned over years, I didn't know this at the beginning, but the most credible you is you. And the biggest problem that most people have in sales is they don't even realize that credibility is the number one thing that you can have. What do I mean by that? That if I am 100% credible, I'm 100% me, I can tell you whatever I want and you'll do it. If I was 100% credible to you two, I could say, hey guys, wire me $1 million today. I'll wire you back $2 million on Friday. And you would do it if I was 100% credible.
Right.
So my goal became to be and pursue my own potential, my own truth of 100% credibility, because the closer to that I became, the closer to being myself I became, the more credibility I would have to learn things like illumination and humility, to tell people about the deficiencies, the weaknesses, the areas that, you know, 3 words, believe it or not, later on in life, I learned in sales. I don't know, but I can find out for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And when you see us smiling, it's because there are common themes across every single interview with these great sellers. One of them is hypervulnerability. One of them is the biggest 3 words in sales, which is, I don't know. And we're watching people tell us, just like you, how by using those words, you automatically and authentically are on the same team as your client. It's like, I don't know. And then you had the magic sauce on the end, which was, but I will go and fight for you, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Go back to that. Go back to your earlier statement, though.
When you stimulating said interest?
No. You said that you were fighting your natural instincts because the stereotype existed. Talk to us about that.
So there's 2 types of sales reps or sales people, professionals.
Yeah.
One is quantum beings that I grew up in a long lineage genetically, probably like some great athletes who I represented later on in my career, that they didn't have to do what I had to do to be an average Division III football player.
Right.
Right. There's guys that just walk on and they're quantumly capable of doing things. Well, I was born into a quantum ability to sell, to oversell, back end sell, lie, manipulate, and cheat. Being able, you know, the old car salesman type of attitude. Mm-hmm. And when you have that capability, you have to be careful to retrain yourself that this is not beneficial to me. My job is to articulate a quantitative value greater than I'm asking for. That's simply all I need to do. If I can quantitatively articulate a value greater than I'm asking for, my statistical success will be so high, especially if I'm credible.
Right.
And people get mixed up. So how do we stimulate interest with this credible, authentic self in the pursuit of our potential? To stimulate interest, you need to find out what someone's doing today pertaining to what you can help with. It's that simple. I have such a simple way, and it wasn't that way when I started. I had to fight. When I first got trained in solution selling, which at least tried to shift my perspective early on, because I'm 24 years old making $1 million
right.
in sales.
Right.
When my mom told me the internet's a fad and I had a law degree, I had a lot of ego issues coming from the genetic disposition, as I said, a quantum overseller.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So now I get this guy coming in from San Diego, Mike Bosworth, that said, no, you're a consultative salesperson. But there was still the sales stigmas attached to, because in the end, the consultative sales was manipulate, oversell, back and sell.
Yeah.
And it was just a systematic way to do that. Where what I learned through that process is, wait a second, if I can find out what do you do today? And all I'm looking for, I'm immediately identifying a gatekeeper, which is completely contradictory to 99% of the companies in their sales, is to overcome a gatekeeper, to get through around a gatekeeper.
Right.
For me, mine's to identify a gatekeeper because I'm in the wrong place. Because I want open minds. I want sponsors and power sponsors. And I want to be able to ask the effective questions to see first if you have an open mind. So initially, if I just say, hey, what are you doing today?
Yeah.
Right? What kind of car do you drive?
An Audi e-tron.
Yeah, right. An Audi e-tron. So what do you like about it?
That I don't ever have to go to the gas station.
And what don't you like about it?
That the auto drive pales in comparison to my partner's Tesla.
Would it help you as well mileage-wise if I could double the amount of miles you make? Would get off a charge?
My mileage is good.
Miles is good. So yeah. It's not an issue. But the ability...
The auto drive is horrible.
It's horrible.
Horrible.
Would it help you if you had a car that not only did everything the e-tron did, but had the best auto drive, was able to do this and this? You know, would that help you?
Yes.
Right. So now I'm in a position and I'll say, well, you know, let me introduce you to someone that may have a solution for you or whatever. But, and then where most people do, no, I don't sell cars, by the way. This is a sales call for something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because remember, I didn't say I was selling a car. I just asked you about your car and what you liked and didn't like about it. And you may tell me, nah, it's not worth it to me. Don't introduce me to the guy, because I do know a guy that has this new car called the Proteus that not only has the best auto drive known to man, but also has a regenerative engine. It actually is a lower grid output of carbon that recharges your battery, and it gets a full charge per gallon of gas. So in 10 gallons of gas, you get 4,000 miles. And it has that auto drive. Can I introduce you to that?
Yes.
Perfect. I'm going to. But do you know anyone that can help me? Right. I'm a sports agent and I'm looking for young talent. And I know you guys told me you work at USC and there's a quarterback at USC that I'd love to meet. Do you know anyone at the school that could help me?
I got you.
So, right. So that whole, what do you do today? What you don't like about it? And then asking, do you know anyone that can help me? Because that's an instant ask of an open mind. First, a lot of people may not even engage, like, not sure. Worth it. I already know I have a closed mind. I'm moving on.
Yeah.
I'm moving on. Now, nope, not interested. You're not interested, and you just told me you're interested in something that has this. Now you're not interested. You have a closed mind. Well, I have thousands and millions and even billions of people now that I can reach, because you never know. I call it the dogs, babysitters, owners, sisters, cousin syndrome, that you never know who's related to
right.
who.
Yeah.
And I have done billions of dollars of business because I've engaged with credibility and emotional attachment to be of service and of value.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've gotten more business getting someone a babysitter, right? Telling them a restaurant recommendation.
Yeah.
But I've learned the one valuable lesson, which was to ask for help.
Right.
See, the other problem of an overseller, a manipulator, a liar, a Midas, is that we know everything. The best salespeople don't know what they don't know, which is why I don't know, but I can find out for you or help you, is the golden rule of an open mind and also humility, that vulnerability, which is so interesting, right? Because the first half of my career, I thought I was vulnerable, but I wasn't. The minute I started telling people the truth, they see it as vulnerable. I see it as invulnerable because you can't catch me. I didn't have to worry about what I told you. I didn't have to have a memory.
Yeah.
I just was always telling you who I was. I like, you know, start off a meeting and say, hey, before we get started, you know, I get to deal with billionaires, owners of teams. Hey, before we get started, I just like to let you guys know I lost over $100 million and I went bankrupt. If that is a problem, I just want to let you know up front.
Yeah, you were smiling because you've covered at least four or five more of those buckets that Colin was talking about. No, that's it's a great thing. This is just consistency all the way across. Trevor Bauer spoke to our class earlier this semester, and he called what you're talking about being authentic all the time to not have to worry about it. He called it downside management. He said, if you're yourself all the time, you don't have to worry about the time you slip up. And it was an interesting,
so good.
An interesting turn of phrase that we liked. But I want to go, you were talking about, you know, asking about a car when that's not actually what your objective was. And that's another thing that we talk a little bit about is every typical sales training talks about adding value. But what we're finding these great sellers do is they add unexpected value. It's completely different, sometimes completely out of left field. And so I'd be curious to know, you know, are there any specific stories around that tactic that you showed, that exercise that you remember working really well?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm just looking over here. One of the things I look for, because I have a sports background, is hats and shirts. People love to wear what they're emotionally attached to. And you don't necessarily have to be obsequious and just be honest. I'm not a Dodger fan. One of my best friends played first base for the Dodgers. I've represented a ton of them, but I'm not a Dodgers fan. I'm a Padres fan. So if I see and have done this, which has resulted in huge, which is completely antithesis of what they would teach you in general sales to get alignment. And I was a complete chameleon, by the way, when I was in the lying mode. So not only would I oversell, back and sell, lie, manipulate, and cheat, I would go up to a guy like this over here with the Dodger hat and be like, ah, do you like the Dodgers? Yeah, me too.
Right.
Wasn't that amazing? Right. And I was like, and then literally in the same party, I'd be like, oh, you like the Raiders? You know, like, right. You like the Giants? They're my favorite team. I probably have six favorite teams.
Right.
Instead, I started learning what you're talking about and have used this. Someone was wearing a Dodger hat. And I said, did you get that hat on sale? He said, what? I said, a Dodger hat. You must have bought it on sale. They haven't won a World Series in 20 years. You didn't pay retail for that, did you? I see those on sales at Marshall's all the time. And the guy started laughing. Now, I don't know who the guy is.
Right.
My luck, it's Frank McCourt's brother, Dave McCourt, billionaire.
Yeah.
Built a Spectrum out. Completely, right? But I've now stimulated interest in me and our relationship.
Yeah.
Yep. Building credibility.
Authentically.
Who do you like, right? I'm a Padres fan.
Yeah.
Well, yep. Oh, and then everything's always been on sale for you. You're right. You know. But then I start saying, well, what do you do? Oh, actually, I'm Frank's brother. Frank who? Frank McCourt. Oh, the owner of the Dodgers? Yeah, yeah. Oh, so where do you guys grow up? And I continue to go on. Now, I have made millions of dollars with David McCourt. He wrote a book called Rethink. We're close friends. When I was, one of my first trips back to Miami as COVID opened up, I got to sit down and the knowledge that he gave me,
right?
The business opportunities, been TV shows. We got, you know, guests on my shows that his connections, you know, from Larry David down. But it started not knowing who he was or caring, but understanding how people think and if he had an open mind. Look, if Dave McCourt didn't have an open mind, he might have been offended. If people have a need to be offended, it's going to be difficult to sell them.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they have a closed mind. It's in, look, the need to be offended, angry, anxious, frustrated, worried, guilty, separate, inferior, superior. You notice how I can ramble these off is because I've remembered and reminded and collected in my brain the triggers for closed-mindedness because I don't want to waste my time
right.
having to convince somebody with a closed mind. There's too many people I'm connected to in person, on the phone, via email, and social and traditional media today. It wasn't always like that. I carried a roll of quarters my first sales job. I was happy when I got a calling card that had 16 numbers so I could quickly get on the phone with somebody
yeah.
without having to pay a higher long distance rate. That's a closed-minded world.
You know what's so special about you talking about closed-mindedness is that the problem is when you're good selling someone that's closed-minded, what you're actually doing is stripping their sense of agency away. Like people don't realize when people say no to you, it's because you're right. Right? Like they don't feel in control of their circumstances. You are literally explaining the opposite, which there's no point in being good if you're talking to someone that's closed-minded because all you do is strip that agency away. And that is really special. So I want to know why you unsold yourself on who a salesperson is supposed to be. Like manipulative lie or whatever. Like you were doing well.
Was there a really moment well. Or an event that made you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How and why?
It was outside of the sales side. It became so easy. Right? At first, it was a challenge. So now it became almost a sport for me. Mm. Can I outwit you? Can
yeah.
I overcome you? And I didn't care if it weared well.
Yeah.
And the reason was, is I thought that money itself as a currency, money was my ends. My emotions was attached. My winning the World Series was attached to my bank account.
Right.
And so I had to shift the paradigm, the currency of money to understand something else, just value and have faith. And I know this may sound
really
weird. So faith to me became the currency instead of money. See, faith is an object of energy that you put into the flow to get what you want. I thought money was the object of energy to get in the flow. Money itself is important. It won't buy you love or happiness. It'll allow you to shop. And if you shop for the right things with faith, you'll be really happy. And when I realized, what if elevating others really elevates myself? What if I actually, every deal I wanted to do, I was capable of articulating the actual value by being honest to exceed what I'm asking for? I called it the 120 rule. And I took it beyond just the economic goal that I had in a deal to be able to provide $100 of value and ask for 20 back.
Mm.
And feel good about it to ask for the 20. Like, can you see any reason you won't want to move forward? And if somebody said, yes, I knew it was either time, the right? They didn't have time to deal with it. Could be emotions. Their dog just died. They don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Or it could have been my inability to articulate the value. And allowing those things to be okay changed my life. Being able to understand I'm just here to provide value and service mm-hmm. instead of me going out and getting it, instead of me, you know, creating a void that I had to fill through promises, overselling, back end selling, and knowing that there's a balance between truth and humankind. Well, when you rely on the humankind, it's very difficult. People talk about exceeding expectations. I will tell you, I probably sold more in quantitative money than most people on earth in the billions. I don't think I've ever exceeded the expectation. The whole, as a whole in a business deal. There's always something that got, there's humankind involved. The only time it ever worked for me was when I had the faith and allowed the universe to fill the void that I created. Then it exceeded expectations because the universe is exact. And if all I was being is a conduit between me and everything else, by the best I could do to pursue my truth, pursue my potential, then it seemed to work. And all of a sudden more people wanted to do business with me and more people. And I wasn't selling. They were coming to me. I was taking orders and
right.
then managing those expectations. So for me, I literally put it into my life. I'll give you an example. And everyone will feel this. I went to a family function. There's a lot of ego triggers in your family. There's people, ideas, there's snapshots of when you're 18.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle, for example, I was raising, as I shifted my paradigm, I was building 50 parties for my birthday, 50 years old, to raise millions of dollars to build a community centers in Africa. My uncle, who knows 18-year-old Dave, overselling Dave in his 20s, says to the chairman of the, I'm the chairman of the board, says to the founder of the charity, so how much are you guys paying Dave to do this? Because and my wife was so offended. She's sitting there with my family at the founder's table. And I walked up and I said, whoa, take a deep breath. Don't be offended. He's just speaking the truth. Because the David Meltzer he knows right. is exactly the guy who wouldn't do it unless there was something in it for him. Mm-hmm. He had no faith. And so I said to myself, I go into a personal situation like that, and I look around, usually my nephew, went to SC, by the way, ran track. He, when I sees me, right, hero Uncle Dave. He wants to be an entrepreneur. He wants, lights up, hugs me. Well, this time I walk in the room, he looks right through me. I look over at my mom, and I said to myself, how do I feel right now? You know, do I have 120 energy? And I realized I don't. And I left the room. I went outside, got my center. I have an exercise where I close my eyes and imagine $100 bills all around me. And I'm handing out $100 bills, collecting 20s back. Mm. And remembering what people feel like. You know, if you've ever been on the street, right? All of a sudden I shed my energy. I walk back into the room. Nephew lights up, comes up, runs and hugs me. My mom had turned around. She feels me through her intuition, turns around, lights up. Right, my baby boy's here. Mm-hmm. Mm. That's what selling is about. See, what happens a lot of time is you may be able to quantitatively speak the truth, but energetically something may be bothering you. Bothering you has nothing to do about your sale. And then what happens is people misdiagnose the emotional connection and they're like, I don't trust that guy.
Right.
Yep.
You lose credibility because you're in an argument with your wife and you went into a situation without being spiritually or faithfully aligned with the value that you're articulating. And so there's a disconnect because people misinterpret. There's something about him that was off. It sounded like a great deal. I'm not doing it.
Yep.
And so I have taken it to a whole nother level to apply value beyond quantitatively articulating value just specifically by money or time or some strict ROI. I want to energetically be aligned so that I have even a greater credibility in the truth.
Yeah. We have this chapter called Pathological Optimism. And I mean, when you read this book, you will be very happy.
Y'all, because I can tell
we are brothers.
Because you guys are the same language. I can tell by you're the two-person jury. You're saying, if I was a lawyer back when, I'd be like, oh, this is easy. I won this case.
We're in the right room. But like,
we've got lawyers in the book too, by the way, selling
top
them
trial lawyers. Yeah. But this, like, you know, we interviewed a top CEO of a huge agency, and he was like, the best part about optimism is like, it gives you permission not to fight the waves, right? And you're talking about that, but I want to talk about this other concept around purpose versus the ephemerality of goals, which I know you know all about. In this idea that, like, when you see someone in a room and everyone gravitates towards them, and you don't know what it is, but you feel a connection with them. What we found through these interviews is that they're so good at articulating their purpose to themselves that they see their purpose in other people. And that's where that magnetic sort of attraction starts to come in. Talk to us about purpose or goals or whatever I just said sparks.
Two things. Yeah. One, the greatest epiphany about purpose to me was my thoughts about purpose are my purpose. Now it's applicable to everything I see because I give meaning to everything I see. It's exactly why people are able to project their purpose onto others and be, I'm not an optimist, I'm a toptimist. I'm right there. And because my thoughts about purpose are my purpose and I give meaning to everything I see, allow me to not attach my emotions to an outcome. Talk about a great sales gift, tool, skill set in life, not just selling something.
Right.
Like in life, I believe life is so integrated in sales. You know, we're always trying to share a vision because that's what's selling to me. I'm always trying to articulate value greater than what I'm asking for, like eating broccoli for my young kids, right? That's a difficult one to share a vision on, but you can do it. But specifically being able to detach, and this is hard for a salesperson, detach their emotions from an outcome. They're like, oh, you don't have goals? Oh, huge goals. You can't ask bigger than Dave Meltzer. You can't ask more often than Dave Meltzer. You can't ask bigger people than David Meltzer, but I've learned to set a milestone, which I want to go surpass and detach my emotions into enjoying the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit, pursuit of that goal, that truth, that potential. But I'm not going to be happy when I graduate, when I make my first million, when I close the deal. I'm never happy. I'm happy pursuing the opportunity itself. Because the thoughts about my purpose are my purpose, and I give meaning to everything I see. So I have to know my what I want personally, experientially, giving and receiving wise, who can help me and who I can help, how I'm going to do it, utilizing what I call the mathematical equation of luck. I'm going to pay attention to and give intention to, with the desire that I must be what I can be, to the coincidences I want, a mathematical equation of luck. And once I decide what, my who, and my how are every day, not being afraid of changing my mind, growing, accelerating, and allowing the snapshots of the past to represent who I was, not who I'm going to be, then I can determine what I'm going to do now. The what, the who, the how allow you to prioritize by importance, not urgency, like Eisenhower talks about. What your now is, then what do? When you know your what, your who, your how, and your now, you apply your why. Too many people think the why is what their activity of, that they should get paid for is. Look, there's love and light and lessons in everything. I have learned to love to take out the trash, and the trash was kryptonite for me. I grew up with six kids and they made me take it out. I was in a fraternity, the smallest football player in the fraternity. They made me take, you think six kid trash is gross? Try fraternity trash. I had three daughters that thought the trash was crazy. I took out trash. It bled on me. It cut me. It spilled on me, especially when I had nice clothes on. I threw it. It would spill. I changed it all because I applied my why to the trash. And I said, you know what trash is to me? It's an opportunity for me to think about being happy and what I want. So now trash became an opportunity to spend 3 to 5 minutes, not just at my house, but my friend's house. It was amazing how attractive I became to my friend's wives. Oh my God, Julie, you are so lucky.
That's it. That's
and she's like, secret. Did you see him without his shirt off?
Meanwhile, you're getting me time.
Exactly. Right. And people don't do that in sales. They don't know. They're so caught up in the why. They're so attached to an outcome that they're going to be happy when they close the deal. Meanwhile, when you close the deal, you're only 20% of the way there, right? Because 80% is collecting.
Yeah.
You know, one of the greatest sales lessons that I can teach anybody, just on a pragmatic term, right? Sell all you want, but 80% is in collecting. So you better be good at a go, no go plan, managing expectations to get the money.
Yeah.
Quantitative value normally in a sale process is money. But knowing your what, your who, your how, and your now allow you to apply a why. Know what triggers it is for closed-mindedness, which is the need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful. I pick up those triggers right away. I'm like, you're not worth my time. I got 1,000 times the energy. This guy over here is at peace. He's willing to help me and learn and converse with me. And I know if I have an open mind, he's going to be a sponsor. He'll know someone that can help me, or a power sponsor. He can help me, and he knows someone that can help me, which makes the best sale, because an open-minded sale is someone that then tells everybody else how great it is. If you close it, here's the thing. It takes 1,000 times the energy to close a closed mind. I mean, to sell a closed mind. But if you sell them and they have a closed mind, they're scarce. They're not going to help you. Even if they're satisfied, they'll find something to not go ahead and be a thriving individual in your community or environment.
Yeah.
Stay on scarce, because we found that this goal conversation, like weirdly enough, like when people focus on goals and not purpose, we find that that lends to them coming from a place of scarcity. If they're backing up on this goal and they're not going to hit it, they move differently, as opposed to obviously abundanza, right? It's like, so where
biggest shit transition in my life. There's three worlds in sales. In a world of not enough, a salesperson thinks everything's happening to them. There's not enough of anything for anyone. And so therefore, they'll put time limits in every single objective that they have, with their attention and intention focused on an outcome and their emotion. The closer every second gets, it gets less and less in the world of to me as a victim or why me. Then there's the world that a lot of salespeople live in. You have these quantum sales reps that are optimistic, charismatic. They're successful, but they live in a scarce world. And it's a difficult world that I had to transition from. It's not an abundant world, but it seems abundant, but it's scarce. People who give to receive. See, one of the things about being successful in sales is that I give to receive. It's a quid pro quo. It's a trade. It's scarce in its nature. And yet you think you're philanthropic because you buy your mom a house, but you don't realize that you truly just bought your mom a house because you wanted her to acknowledge that you're the favorite of six kids and tell all the rest of the family how you bought a house. It wasn't abundant. Mm. It was a trade, a negotiation, but you're a great sales because you're good at trading and negotiating mm-hmm. and overcoming and working in a scarce world of just enough for me. Mm-hmm. And it's a very difficult thing because you buy things that you don't need to be happy. If you feel yourself unhappy again, because your bank account goes, you buy different things or more things, or you buy things to impress people. Worse, buy things to impress people you don't even like. Mm-hmm. This scarce world is a this middle one especially, this one usually not successful salespeople that live in the world of not enough. They have to have this charisma and optimism and, you know, go-getter, you know, utilizing time in a different perspective. But you're lying to only one person in the world of for me, yourself. That's the world I lived in a long time. But there's this interesting world where you start realizing that if my true intention is to be of service and of value to others, that if I truly believe to plant seeds under trees I won't ever live under, if I truly believe to elevate others will elevate myself, if I truly believe there's more than enough of everything for everyone, if I truly believe that, I am healthy, I am wealthy, I am worthy already, what am I doing to interfere with it? It's a different paradigm shift. If I'm able to live in a world of more than enough of everything for everyone, then all I'm concerned about is not asking, it's receiving. Why? Because the more I receive, the more I can give. And all I want to do is appreciate what I receive, meaning the greatest way to appreciate what you receive is to give it away. You have to have intention to receive, but also an intention or purpose or thoughts of purpose of meaning of what you're receiving, of what impact it will have to buy villages in Africa, to educate kids, to clean water, or healthy food, or whatever your purpose, your thoughts of purpose are. But what changed for me was I realized that it does me no good to give to receive. I needed to receive to give. And I needed to use gratitude, forgiveness, and accountability in order to give like my mom had given mm-hmm. unconditionally.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, because Brené Brown talks about this, like everyone wants to talk about abundance and scarcity. People forget about the middle part, which is like sufficiency. Which is, you know, just AKA enough. Gratitude. And if you have that, right, then you're not wanting. And I know we're running out of time and we got good questions.
Cool. Yeah.
So grateful for the extra time. Oh, thank you. So I'm gonna ask you two final questions, I guess. One, who is the best salesperson that you know? And when we say salesperson, we mean it as the greatest compliment that you can give someone.
And that's how we ended up with you, by the way. We asked that question to someone and they said you.
There's so many good ones. And, you know, I've learned from the Brian Tracys and the Dennis Waitley's.
Think about someone without sales in their title.
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking of right now. And I know who it is. I think the greatest salesperson that I've ever met is Sadhguru. The Sadhguru, he understands abundance and value and lessons in life. And he has, and the reason I think he's the best is I look for the person with the littlest ego. In other words, the person who has the least amount of interference between them and what already exists. Mm. And Sadhguru, out of all the human beings that I've ever met and been associated with, he just does not have as much interference. See, for me, it's a matter of time. And this comes from learning how to sell. And I'm always going to have ego. I'm going to have triggers of the ego, people, ideas, all these things. But for me, if I can just spend minutes and moments in ego, and that interference, the needs, the triggers, instead of days, weeks, months, and years. And I think Sadhguru spends minuscule moments in ego.
Right.
And he's in the flow. He truly believes in abundance and he has credibility and emotional attachment. He can quantify with extreme intellect, higher power of thinking, the reasons, the impacts, and the capabilities that he has or he can find for others in order to effectuate that value that we talk about. So the Sadhguru would be the best salesperson that I've ever met.
And the last question, somebody who's written a couple of books at least, right?
Four.
Four, okay. You've been through,
I've
you've
written
been
eight, down four this road. I published, I'm holding off. My next book is Don't Do Business with Dicks.
I like that.
Working title or actual title?
Actual title. That's the only title I've ever, while I was working on it, everyone's like, can I buy that book?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. We are so much more simpatico probably than you realize, having only met us for 45 minutes.
Oh, you knew our work.
I know.
This is great.
You guys are my new best friends. I get it.
We look forward to it. So the question is, what advice do you have for two schlubs who are writing their first book, who are on this mission to change the way that the world views selling and salespeople? Building our platform essentially from scratch and really trying to make a splash.
It's easy. It's the same advice I give myself today. I'm 53 years old, 43, 33, 23, even 13. I wish I would have given it to myself. Ask. As much as you think you get asked, when you ask big of people of the universe, when you ask, you're allowing, you're actually putting faith into the fact that you live in an abundant universe, that there is more than enough of everything, that you are radically humble, that you are going to allow with patience and persistence blended together, with truth and humankind blended together, with this idea of, I can give everything that I have. I can have a desire to be all that I can be, to enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential. But the only way I get there is not by myself. Is to allow the superpowers of everyone else to come through me and allow mine to come to you. Remember, every weakness moved to a different place is a power. And there's so many examples of it. So many examples. But if you can allow yourself to ask, and then when you say, wait a second, that's not a big enough ask, and think bigger. I was just on the phone with Sean Lee Mao, with Zola, and she's just the classic example of someone who thinks bigger. That's why she's the CEO of a $1 billion company who started out as, you know, a low-level digital marketer at Yahoo. And just asking, does people, the universe, I ask all day long, do you know anyone that can help me? Magic question. Do you know? I'm just asking two things when I ask you. One, do you have an open mind? And two, do you know anyone that can help me?
Right.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you like. My only ask is you help me empower others to be happy.